Hello and welcome to the EMS On Air podcast. The mission of this podcast is to keep healthcare providers safe, informed, and prepared. Today is July 8, 2020. I'm Jeff Lassers, and I'll be your host. The EMS On Air podcast is now available on American CME. This means that EMS providers can earn EMS continuing education credits by completing an entire podcast episode and then a brief post-course quiz and survey. Visit AmericanCME.com, click on the courses link, then click on free courses. Scroll through the course list and look for the courses with the EMS On Air podcast logo. We will continue to release more and more EMS on-air podcast episodes on American CME so that EMS providers can benefit from the continuing education credits while they kick back and listen to their new favorite EMS podcast. For now, we got about five or so episodes on there, and they're currently only approved for EMS providers in Michigan, but don't worry, we are on it, and yes, they will continue to be free. Keep checking in for more updates because we will have some really cool stuff for the rest of the nation as well over the months to come. For the last 18 years, I've been a firefighter and EMS provider. In that time, I've also spent about 2 years working full-time as a paramedic tech in an ER. I've been involved in tons and tons of classes and training sessions as an EMS and fire instructor, and I've also spent a lot of time at the administrative level for a community college EMS program and the Oakland County Medical Control Authority. On top of that, I've worked with many subject matter experts to develop hundreds of hours of education content online. But no matter how much I'm involved, I always seem to find out about something that is new to me that has been around for a while. The Michigan Association of Ambulance Services, or MAAS, is one of those things. Before I sat down with their executive director, I thought MAAS was a group of private ambulance agencies collaborating on common issues here locally in Southeast Michigan. It turns out I was wrong, and MAAS's membership is actually made up of every type of EMS agency and system that you can think of throughout the great state of Michigan, including municipal EMS agencies and even flight transport EMS. In this episode, we sit down with Angela Madden, the executive director of MAAS, which is a resource and advocate for ambulance services in Michigan. Angela is here to discuss MAAS's mission to continue to advocate for and advance the profession of EMS within the state of Michigan, as well as tell us about some cool stuff that they've helped get for the EMS community recently and not just for its members and agencies. MAAS is one of many associations throughout the state of Michigan that aim to serve its members as well as the rest of the non-member EMS community. Did you know that MAAS has been instrumental in getting every EMS provider in Michigan a $1,000 hazard pay bonus from the government? I had no clue the money was even available until Angela told me about it. And don't worry, we will let you know what your agency needs to do to ensure everyone who qualifies gets their check. MAAS has been working on some other cool stuff that we'll get into in this episode, and we'll talk about what they are working on for the benefit of the future of EMS providers in general. In our next episode, we plan on addressing a number of questions and concerns that we've been receiving from the EMS community. That next episode will be recorded on July 14, 2020, and the entire episode will be dedicated to answering COVID questions from the EMS community. We have been getting more and more questions from our EMS providers and want to make sure that we address them as much as we can. The goal is to make sure we're all on the same page regarding current protocols and best practices at this time. So please email your questions to qi@ocmca.org. We welcome any and all questions and nothing is off limits. Visit ocmca.org/coronavirus for the latest information, protocols, podcast episodes, and other details. And follow us on Instagram @EMSOnAir and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave a rating and a review. Enjoy the podcast. Good morning, ladies. How are we?
Wonderful.
Good morning, Jeff.
As we said in the introduction, we are here this morning with Angela Madden, who is the executive director of the Michigan Association of Ambulance Services. Angela, can you tell us who you are, what you do, and what the Michigan Association of Ambulance Services, or MAAS, is?
I'd be happy to. And just wanted to say quickly, Jeff, thank you so much to you and Bonnie for having me on the podcast as a guest. I very much appreciate getting out and telling MAAS's story. My name is Angela. You've already introduced me, and I'm the executive director of MAAS. I've been with the association for just over 5 years now. I started in 2013, so almost 7 years, coming into the organization as its first executive director outside of what we in the association world call association management profiles. And it has been a whirlwind, to say the least. So MAAS was learning what it means to have an executive director on board. All at the same time, I was learning what it meant to be working for MAAS and what it meant to be an ambulance agency in the state of Michigan, or a life support agency in the state of Michigan. It's been a wonderful ride, and my background is specifically in the trade association world. It's kind of a niche, particularly here in the Lansing area where I reside and work. We have a trade association for just about everything, and in fact, there's even a trade association for trade association executives. And I am a one-man show. I do it all. Everything from membership development to lobbying to regulatory agency work with the EMS division here at MDHHS, and I love every minute of it.
So as the executive director of MOS, you have a lot of responsibilities. But before we go into all of that and all of the nuances of MOS, let's tell our audience who MOS is, what it does, and why it exists.
That's a great question, Jeff. So MOS, the Michigan Association of Ambulance Services, we are a 501c6 not-for-profit trade association. That means 501c6 is the section of the IRS code that allows us to operate as a nonprofit organization, but at the same time, it does allow us to lobby on behalf of our members. That is the sheer difference between a trade association and what you would typically view as a not-for-profit. A hospital, a foundation, they are typically organized under Section 501c3, which has different lobbying restrictions on what they can do. So we have about 75 active ambulance agency members within our organization statewide. Those agencies cover 95% of the geographic territory of our state, and they operate in 63 counties. They are a wide-ranging group of members. Everything from your private, for-profit, not-for-profit EMS agencies to municipally based, large and small. We do our best to represent all agencies at all levels across the board all the time.
It's not that well known of a group in the context of your general EMS provider, but it is an organization like many other throughout the state that represent EMS or first responder organizations. I think a lot of people that know of MOS assume that most of its constituents or its members are private ambulance agencies. But what I heard you say is you also had municipal agencies as well.
So our membership base, like you said, is typically known to just be that private for-profit and not-for-profit EMS agency, when in reality, that is absolutely not the case. And in fact, a large proportion of our membership is actually municipally owned. Those that are county-owned, for example, our friends at Livingston County, a great example. We have EMS authorities, which are made up of multiple municipalities, from the small authority to the larger authority, to even the city-owned and smaller municipally-owned agencies all across our state. A lot of them operating in the very rural areas, and some, like my friends in Livingston that I just mentioned, are in the more urban areas of our state. So our representation is a very large cross-section of what EMS is here in our state, urban versus rural, municipal versus private. We represent everybody equally, and we do our best to ensure that what we do, what I do on behalf of our organizations, helps all agencies, regardless of their ownership type, regardless of their size, and irregardless as to whether or not they are a MOS member or if they're not.
So there's probably agencies that you collaborate with that aren't members to your organization, because I foresee there being opportunities to collaborate with agencies that, you know, may not qualify for the opportunities to be in MOS, but would benefit from partnering with.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the utmost and foremost belief systems from me in particular, from myself. That is something that I very much hold myself out to establish and to establish those relationships throughout the state with what I would consider both traditional and non-traditional allies. It does not matter to me if your agency ownership type is fire-based or if you're private or not for profit or for profit. We all operate, we all have the same patients across our state, and we all need to ensure that our patients are transported safely, professionally, and with the utmost care and compassion on their worst day. What I strive to do and what I encourage MOS members to do and non-members to do is to work across those traditional and non-traditional ally lines. And I think a good example would be, and Bonnie, I think you're right there with me on this, a good example would be some work that we've done through the EMSCC, the Emergency Medical Services Coordinating Committee, on a number of different issues, including an administrative rules review that we all operate under. I think that's been a fantastic exercise exercise for all of us to really understand what it means to work together for the betterment of the EMS community in our state.
I absolutely agree with you, Angela. I have never worked so closely with MAZ and other associations as I have lately with you, as you have brought other different types of associations on board to work together. The Rules is one huge example that we have been able to collaborate across all spectrums. That's been really great, and I hope we just continue doing that, getting more of the MCAs even involved as we go along.
What would you say the major intent or goal of your group and its members is?
Jeff, we have two real driving purposes right now within MAZ. The first being to ensure that legislatively and regulatorily, all ambulance agencies in our state are operating efficiently, that they're operating compassionately for our patients, but that they are operating in a system that allows them to continue operating so that their regulatory burden, their legislative burden is not so great that it denigrates their ability to do their job with the compassion and the professionalism that we know that they do their job every day. With that comes the reimbursement piece. So role number one for MAZ is that lobbying piece, that regulatory and legislative lobbying piece. Role number two right now is working with our partners in the payer area to ensure that those ambulance agencies are getting reimbursed for the work that they're doing and the work they're doing on the street. Because as you know, as Bonnie knows, as every EMS professional that's listening to this podcast knows, the role of EMS and in the healthcare system, not only in our state, but nationally, is changing and it is continuing to evolve. So we want to ensure that the structure that each EMS agency works under today, particularly the reimbursement structure, the legislative structure, is evolving with our work that we do every single day with our patients. And that includes with our payers. So we have been, MAZ has been striving and working, and we work at various committee levels within our organization. And our reimbursement committee is probably the one that works the hardest and the most to work daily with each individual payer if we need to ensure that whether or not it's Medicare or Medicaid or a private insurer, that everybody is operating at the same level. And that benefits every EMS agency here in our state.
Your organization is obviously broken down into components. You being the executive director, you're essentially like Bonnie is for OCMCA. She is our executive director. As the facilitating leader for MAZ, you probably report to a board of directors or alike. We do the same here. So can you break down the components of MAZ, including probably the board of directors, your committees, members, and affiliates, and kind of paint the picture of what it looks like and all of the moving parts?
Absolutely. So MAZ is governed, is the term that we would use here with a trade association, is governed by a board of directors made up of 18 agency representatives. We like to ensure that that makeup is, and by bylaws is required, to be representative of the entire MAZ membership. So that means those 18 members are a cross-section of nonprofit, for-profit, municipally owned, rural, urban, small, large, and air. And we continue to operate with that large cross-section to ensure that every conversation we have at that board table, or in today's environment, that board Zoom, does continue to represent every type and size of ambulance agency across the state. So that is goal number one. That hasn't always been the case with MAZ, and it is something that I have worked very, very hard to ensure that that cross-section is a much more clear representation of the agencies that we represent as an organization. After the board, we do have several committees that operate and that work very regularly. The reimbursement committee, which I already mentioned, is made up of billing professionals within ambulance agencies. These are the people that know on the ground what happens. They work with the payers every single day. They know what claims are being approved, which claims are being denied, why they're being denied. We basically pull them and pool them together to talk about the issues that they're having on the agency level. Typically, if one agency is finding an issue with a particular payer, it's happening to others. So then we work as a group to either find a resolution. Perhaps one agency has already found a resolution in working directly with that agency. If that's the case, we share it. We share it fast. We want everyone to know how to work with their payers and how to ensure that they're getting the reimbursement they deserve. If it's not working, Then we work together. We get in touch with that payer. We work with my colleagues at some of those payer organizations. The Michigan Association of Health Plans has been a fantastic partner for us. Again, that non-traditional ally that I talked about. And then we work to find a resolution to the issue, and we share that information across our membership and outside of our membership, because what has been important to us, particularly on that committee, are the payer agencies. So our friends that do billing specifically for multiple agencies, we find it extremely important that they are involved and they participate. That way, all of their clients benefit, regardless if they're MOS members or not. Also in our committee, we have a legislative committee that works on lobbying. We have a professional standards committee that works on everything from your traditional PSRO issues to remounts to, I can't tell you what's on their agenda right now. It's unbelievable some of the items that they are touching on. And that committee has been developed with professionals from multiple agencies across the state that have professional experience in that area. So we have vehicle mechanics on the committee. We have HR representatives on that committee. We have practitioners on that committee. So we try to ensure that each committee is made up and is representative of a group that truly encompasses the full complex issues that that committee is going to address. And that's very, very important to us. It does us no good to have a room full of agency leaders working on a reimbursement committee if they're not the ones that are working with the billers every single day. It doesn't do us any good. We want the people on the ground, and we want the people that know how to find resolution so that it benefits everybody. Under our committees, we have our general membership, and I would encourage anybody who wants to participate at the committee level to reach out to any member of the board, to reach out to me. We are always looking for people to get involved and to become more active in the organization.
So are you looking for more of the administrative type personnel, or people looking to move into the administrative type personnel role? Or are you looking for EMS providers from the street that are interested in understanding these organizations more and being a part of your association?
The answer to that is both, Jeff. The answer to that is both. We would love to work with anybody within an agency who is looking for information to move up within their agency, to become a better leader, to better understand what their current agency leadership is working on within our organization. At the same time, we truly need information from everybody that's working the street to really understand. And I would encourage them to talk to their supervisors in their own organization, in their own agency as well, so that they can become more aware of how things are operating, what's happening above them too. Not necessarily above them in a chain of command, but what's happening above work on the street to ensure that their jobs can continue and continue professionally.
Can you kind of give us a background of the last 5 years, you know, pre-2020, 5 years ago? Let's talk about some key points that you guys have worked on, that you've accomplished, and how maybe that's affected the entire EMS population in Michigan in general, not just your membership. Because I think what you've been conveying is that the collaboration results in a win for everybody, from the patient to every provider in the mitten and the UP, not just the organizations that essentially pay dues to your association, right?
Absolutely. So I think one of the main items that we should absolutely talk about today is something we lovingly refer to as a QAP, or a Quality Assurance Assessment Program. And that was a legislative initiative that MAS undertook to essentially raise Medicaid reimbursement rates. And it effectively raised Medicaid reimbursement rates 20% in the program. As the name of the program does depict, it is an assessment. So each agency around the state does pay an assessment to the state, which then the State Department uses to draw down additional federal funds from the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, which then they use to increase Medicaid reimbursement rates by 20%. So we are assessing ourselves to essentially pay ourselves. And I think that is a great example. That particular legislative issue is a great example of how not everyone was at the table and was supportively at the table from day one. But yet, I believe the majority of agencies have seen the benefit after it's been in place for since 2018. So for 2 years now, has seen the benefit of that increase in their Medicaid reimbursement rates. That was a tricky one. That was a tricky one for us to message. It was a tricky one for us to work with the state on, because it does require additional work from our friends at MDHHS, particularly the math geniuses in the actuarial division. And it was a hard message to get across. Unfortunately, a number of MOS members, because of the way the programs are made up federally, had to lose, which means they pay more than they receive back from the program. So we had to deal with a cross-section of membership that lost, that are they're paying in to support other agencies, and they're not seeing the benefit of that. That is happening statewide, but it is happening for the benefit of the entire EMS system in our state. So I think that, Jeff, was one of those issues that we saw some divergence in opinion. Of course, nobody wants to lose money, but in the end, in the long run, it did work out well. Also, pre-2020, I think one of the biggest wins for myself personally, and something that I have been very, very excited and very proud of, was that idea that I touched on earlier today and making the MOS Board of Directors and ensuring that the MOS Board of Directors and our members and our committee members really were and representative of a cross-section of agency type and size. So that has been extremely important to me and something that I wear very proudly.
That's a very cool thing that you're kind of trying to mirror what the populace of Michigan looks like throughout the entire state with its EMS logistics and agencies, and then trying to mirror that in your organization to kind of make those decisions. It only makes sense. And then evolving that as it changes. It's never going to be the same. It's always going to be in a state of change, and trying to keep up with that is the goal, so that we're always honest about our strengths, weaknesses, and lessons learned, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned there was increasing reimbursement for Medicaid or Medicare. Now, I understand why I think that's awesome. If I'm a fire department chief that does EMS, if I'm a CEO or executive for a private agency or a municipal EMS agency of any type, why should I care about that if I just go on calls? Because where I work at the West Bloomfield Fire Department, I'm not even an officer. I just go on calls. I don't do anything administratively. I do a little bit of training here and there. Give me some benefits. Is why does that make my life and profession better, knowing that an organization like yours is doing something like that?
That is an absolutely great question, Jeff. And I've got to tell you, every practitioner on the street, every member, every road crew absolutely needs to pay attention and get informed on what's going on administratively within their organizations. Without that increase in Medicaid reimbursement, and by the way, Medicaid reimbursements haven't been increased in over 20 years, yet the cost of ensuring that our ambulances are safe for you as a practitioner, not just for our patient, but that they are safe for you as a practitioner to work in, that you have the most up-to-date and quality equipment to utilize while you are working, when you come across a patient in a huge trauma patient in dire straits, to ensure all that costs money. And the only type of money we get is either municipally through a millage or through reimbursement. And if we can't continue to increase our reimbursement rates to keep up with the type of work that you are doing on the street, that a practitioner is doing on the street, or to keep up with the cost of equipment to ensure you have the newest power lift cot, to ensure you have a stair chair, to ensure that you have the proper equipment that you need to do your job, we need to ensure that your reimbursement rates are continuing to be equitable and to help us provide so that you can provide for your patients.
It makes total sense, because at the end of the day, like you said, the costs keep increasing, because as we advance and increase safety, we have technologies, we have logistics, things are going to increase in costs. And so it needs to be a relative increase in the recuperation of those costs so that we can ensure the best for future patients. Otherwise, we're going to have to keep diminishing our resources, and that's just not sustainable. So, Angela, many of your organizations in Michigan, I'm going to go ahead and say most of them, were affected in some capacity by the COVID-19 virus. Here in southeastern Michigan, we've been slammed by it. Logistically, at all of our hospitals, we kind of have a ground zero here over at Southfield, Michigan. As an EMS provider in the field, I'm not too far from Southfield. We've been dealing with a whole lot of it as well. Many agencies throughout the state and across the country have been very fortunate to receive some type of compensation or hazard pay during this. And many of us that have received that are very grateful for that. I believe that your organization has also been working on some type of federal funding to help with hazard pay for EMS providers in Michigan. Can you give us a background and what's going on with that?
Absolutely. So each state has received a pot of money from our friends at the federal government for coronavirus work. Everything from to help purchase PPE to, like you mentioned, hazard pay. So of Michigan's lump sum, there have been most recently in legislation $3 billion dedicated to various efforts across our state. So within that is money dedicated specifically to PPE grants, money to long-term care facilities, nursing facilities to ensure that they are able to properly respond, congregate care facilities. But the other part that you mentioned in there is a $1,000 per provider hazard pay initiative that Moz worked on exclusively. We wanted to ensure that everybody realized that our state legislator, the legislators, that our governor realized that coronavirus and the response to coronavirus was a healthcare issue. And who better to receive a hazard pay benefit than those practitioners that have been on the ground dealing with this from day one? And it's not just the road crews that will benefit from this, because Moz believes that there are a number of unsung heroes within an agency over and above, not over and above, but around with our crews who are working and helping our patients. But those are the people that are stocking your trucks. Those are the people that are disinfecting your trucks when you come back. Those are your dispatchers. So it was Moz's belief that that $1,000 hazard pay needed to be spread out amongst all of our practitioners and those that are working diligently within the agencies behind the scenes to ensure that they received the money that they deserved for working during this. Well, nobody else was working. Well, everybody else was sitting home. Most everybody else was sitting home. They were the ones still out there on the street doing their job as if nothing had changed. And it was important to us that they be shown a very large level of appreciation and thank you for the job that they continue to do. And so our friends in the legislature agreed. We have a dedicated, I believe, $100 million of that $3 billion specifically for hazard pay, which will be in $1,000 increments to everybody.
When you say everybody, do you just mean the EMS providers and subsequent providers at agencies that are members to your organization, or do you mean every provider in Michigan? If you hold an EMS license and you've been working at an agency, are you going to get that money?
You are absolutely going to get that money, assuming your EMS agency applies for it, which they should. And it does not matter if you are a Moz member or if you are not. It does not matter if you are working part-time or if you are working full-time. Your agency needs to apply for that money, and they need to ensure that you get your hazard pay bonus.
Where do I Google to, if I'm an agency leader that I'm unaware of this, where should I start and look for this information?
You should absolutely be stalking the Michigan Department of Treasury's website. We anticipate information coming out this week, hopefully tomorrow, fingers crossed, about how agencies can apply. But more importantly, Moz is going to be blasting that information out among all of our social channels, on our website, via email, and not just to our members. Everybody will get the information that they need in order to apply for these funds.
Well, we'd be happy to help you out with that on the EMS On Air podcast as well. We'll announce that and where people can get that information. And I'm sure we can make it available through multiple websites. If you guys did all the work to get us that money, it'd be a shame to make one person miss out on that. So
absolutely,
we'll help get that out to everybody listening. That is a great list of achievements over the last 5 years, and it sounds like you've been very busy, which is very cool. I'm going to go ahead and guess that things aren't going to get less busy for you in the next 5 years. And you seem like the kind of person who does 1, 3, and 5 year planning. So may I ask you, what is your plan or the intent and purpose of your organization or maybe some goals for Moz over the next 5 years?
People, 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 and people, Jeff. That is our goal. Everybody knows that we're short. Everybody's working extra shifts. We're working for multiple agencies, and we're tired, and we need people. So Moz's first and utmost goal is to assist in any way possible with the recruitment and retention of personnel in our state. anything from legislative initiatives that help make it easier to get licensed. And mostly by that, it would be tuition reimbursement or working with various educational institutions to promote the industry, which we have been doing and will continue to do over the next 3 years. And you're right, we are big planners over here at Moz. I can't stress enough the importance of our people. They are the backbone of our industry. They're the backbone of each agency, and we need them. And we need to find a way to ensure that not only can we recruit new, fresh, young blood into the agency, but how do we retain the people that we have? It's becoming more and more frequent now. We get a great paramedic who's working the road, and then they go off to nursing school, they go off to PA school, they go off to med school, and those professions are better for it. Their gain is absolutely our loss. So we need to figure out how do we then keep that rotation. If that's going to happen, how do we get new people in, get them trained up, then send them off to work and become great doctors and nurses? Or how do we get people in and show them the profession and the career they can absolutely make in our agency and what it means to be on your best day, on their best day, on somebody else's worst day when they truly need medical help? So that is goal number one and something that we have been working with our partners across the state, both regulatorily, legislatively, and our traditional and non-traditional allies to ensure that we can help bring in and help sophisticate that recruitment and retention effort. That's goal number one over the next 3 to 5 years, and we have to do it to sustain the industry.
So when it comes to recruitment and retention, I think we all know that number one is that compensation makes it very difficult to stay in the EMS industry for a long time sometimes. Many of our EMS providers don't make, let's call it, a huge amount of money, right? Some do pretty good, some don't. A lot of recruitment and retention, let's face it, especially in our society, you need to make enough money to live the lifestyle of which you would like to. You can go make more money, like he kind of pointed out. You go to nursing school, you can probably make more money than an EMS provider, med school, PA. Your loans will probably be much higher. But there are some things that people utilize EMS to achieve getting to another spot. And a lot of that is propelled by the fact that EMS does not generate a huge amount of compensation for its providers. Now, I'm assuming that you guys are working on some type of legislation or lobbying in this type of growth and sustainability, because I can imagine things like tuition being expensive is going to prohibit me from even going to school for something that's not going to pay a lot back, or continuing to increase reimbursements so that our agencies have more capital in order to invest into their personnel. Can you give us some of the mission or goals you're working on in that regard?
Absolutely. And it's twofold. The work of our reimbursement committee will continue to increase throughout our time, you know, over the course of years, because their work is becoming more sophisticated with various levels. A couple of things right now that we are even working on as we speak due to coronavirus: pay for treatment in place. Our friends at Medicaid already do cover treatment in place, but our friends at Medicare and a number of private payers do not. So we are working on that right now. And coronavirus is a great example. How many patients did you treat in their home? Did you put them on oxygen? Did you give them a breathing treatment? Whatever needed to happen, but didn't transport them. Guess what? You didn't get paid for that yet, but we hope that you will, when we believe that you should. A number of private payers are absolutely seeing the benefit on their bottom line. Let's talk about our friends at Blue Cross. Blue Cross has already seen the benefits of paying for treat in place, of paying for our community paramedics on hospital discharge, on ER diversion. That has become a money saver, a cost saver to them. And so our reimbursement committee and other areas and other entities within Moss, other committees, other our board members are working directly with payers that they have great relationships with to really help bring them into the 21st century and say, look, we're not a transportation business. We're not in the transportation business. We're in the healthcare business, and we're here to treat your patients. And we're going to continue to treat your patients because that's what's best for our patient. So let's talk about how you now can see the benefit of the work that we're doing, how we are keeping your cost down by not transporting that patient every time, or by following up with that patient post-discharge so that we are not seeing increases in readmissions. So that right there is a huge part. And this coronavirus pandemic is a great example of how our work in that reimbursement field has benefits across the board for our patients, for our hospitals. We don't want our hospitals to get overtaxed, and for our payers. as well to save money. We've talked about various things at the provider level for tuition reimbursement to help them cover the cost of going from EMT to paramedic or MFR to EMT. We talk about potentially doing an increase in reimbursement rates with Medicaid through the QAP. Again, another added benefit across the board that will eventually benefit our providers on the street by helping keeping them employed, and hopefully assisting some of their either in purchasing additional equipment or better equipment or increasing their pay. We talk about assisting at the federal level, changing the way an EMS agency is defined. So a lot of people might not realize that an EMS agency at the federal level is defined as a supplier of transportation. Okay, we are not providers of healthcare. We're not a provider. We are a supplier. And that makes a big difference in the reimbursement level that we get from our friends at CMS, particularly in Medicare. And as our population ages and more of our state's population becomes Medicare eligible, that makes a big difference on the reimbursement rate that we can get. So there are some very specific and intricate items that we're working on both here at the state level, privately with our payers on a one-on-one basis, and federally with our friends at CMS, that all wrap together that will help EMS agencies provide better for their patients and for their employees.
The mission, I think, is always to be the most useful to everyone, and the success will follow. Otherwise, if the aim is success, you'll fall short. But if the aim is usefulness, I'm sure the success will find itself. So as an EMS provider in the field whose agency probably isn't a part of your association, thank you.
Anytime.
I appreciate that. Bonnie, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I just think this is a great conversation. A lot of things that I didn't even know that I think a lot of our MCAs don't know what MOZ is doing. So I think this is going to be a great benefit for everybody listening to this podcast today.
There's one more item, Jeff, I'd like to bring up. And this, I think, in relation to the pandemic, last week, MOZ partnered with MDHHS on a press release relating to out-of-hospital cardiac arrests and out-of-hospital deaths that have been happening statewide. The state, I believe, saw an increase, an astronomical increase of 42-ish percent. Don't quote me on that number. I don't remember exactly what it was. All while seeing an overall decrease in patient transports. The one thing with MOZ working on that, our president, Jack Fisher from Medic One, had a quote in that press release. That press release was picked up and had a reach of 100 million impressions just since last Thursday. When we talk about partnerships, not just, you know, within other organizations that represent EMS agencies, whether that be our IC Society or the fire chiefs or the union or our friends in the MCA level, but partnerships with the state too has been really helpful. And I think that example, something that the EMS division had brought to the attention of their colleagues in the department in communications, might not necessarily have gotten the attention that it got hadn't MOZ pushed that same message forward to my contacts in the department as well. And I know you kind of briefly mentioned my previous life with the department, which is true. I did previously work at MDHHS in legislative affairs. So I was able to utilize my connections there and my contacts there to say, hey, this isn't just about, yes, transports are down. And remember, we're not getting the reimbursement for those transports, but we have a serious public health crisis going on with people not seeking medical care right now, which is far more important. And the chief medical doctor needs to say something about it. And she did. And we got 100 million impressions from it. MOZ wasn't the headline there. In fact, that went out on MDHHS letterhead. And Dr. Khaldun was on numerous radio and TV and paper news articles. MOZ got some too, but that wasn't the point. That wasn't the point at all. We did the legwork. We will be happy to help and assist in any way we can, but that wasn't for us to get a pat on the back. That was to ensure that people are getting the appropriate medical attention that they deserve.
I have to thank you so much for that, because in the mix of all of this, March, April, we were seeing this. Our providers were seeing that in reality, in their real time, and finding people at a priority four, going on priority fours constantly, not transporting people who are sick. They were signing themselves off. We were seeing that, and we started running the numbers, and we were shocked by it in March and April and even early May. So I'm so glad, just from our little county, to be able to look at that throughout our state and see what an impact that has been on our patients.
Yeah, I think it's important that groups continue to collaborate in order for everyone to benefit. We all share the same problems, and we can all succeed with our same strengths and the different, let's call it, markets that we service, the different people that we service or areas. So thank you. We appreciate that, because being aware of what's going on around us helps us plan for tomorrow. And that's what's really important here.
And thank you to everyone out there listening. Please continue to email your questions, comments, feedback, or ideas to qi@ocmca.org and visit ocmca.org/coronavirus for the latest information, protocols, podcast episodes, and other details. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram @EMSOnAir and subscribe, leave a rating and review on whatever podcast platform that you're into. Thank you for listening to the EMS On Air podcast. Stay safe and have a great day.